This is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm David Brancaccio.
Top Federal Reserve policymakers have been speaking out amid the countrywide focus on racism in America, both by individuals and institutions. Today, the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas on how stamping out racism would contribute to everyone's success. Robert Kaplan, thank you for joining us.
Good to talk with you, David.
Tell us about your current thinking about race and prosperity for all. I'm using prosperity for all instead of saying the economy.
The fact of the matter is that the better all of us do, the better the economy does. And what I mean by that, in particular, blacks and Hispanics have historically seen their rates of unemployment and their participation in the workforce lag the general population. We were able to close that gap somewhat in the last few years. Because of the pandemic, we've now taken a step backwards, and we've now see a wider gap between black and Hispanic unemployment and white unemployment, and it's been made worse by this pandemic. And what I've said many times is blacks and Hispanics are the fastest growing demographic groups in this country. If they don't do well, if they don't participate fully in this economy, we're simply going to grow more slowly. We'll have slower workforce growth, and we'll have slower productivity growth. And so it's very critical for all of us, for our future prosperity, that we find ways to have a more inclusive economy.
Well, I mean, put simply, it's everybody's problem, systemic racism, as far as it affects the economy and beyond.
Yes, it's all of our problems. And the challenge is there's a number of things that we're going to need to do to address it. I've spent a lot of time here at the Dallas Fed talking about, in particular, improving early childhood literacy, expanded pre-K, improving educational attainment, as well as beefed up skills training. Those would be some examples of real changes that we're making progress on, but we can do much better, I think, that would help close this gap and would give us better GDP growth as a country.
Now, your chair, the chair, Jay Powell, this week testifying in front of the Senate Banking Committee, was asked a question about stemming inequality. And this is what he said. He said, a tight job market is probably the best single thing the Fed can do to support gains by all low and moderate income communities, and particularly for minority communities. Now, when he said that, what I heard was fine policies that do help everybody. I mean, that has to be good, but that doesn't deal with inequality. I hear you and your colleague Raphael Bostic at the Atlanta Fed saying something different. In addition to lifting all boats, there need to be policies.
Yeah, so I agree with Chairman Powell that what we found going into the crisis is by having a tight job market, we were able to pull in underrepresented groups, people who had not participated fully. The issue is, beneath that, in order to have a tight job market and get underrepresented groups to fully participate, all the work we're doing here in research at the Dallas Fed suggests we need to improve early childhood literacy again, expand pre-K. We're finding that blacks and Hispanics are lagging the rest of the population in terms of reading at grade level at first and third grade. And our studies that we've looked at show if you're behind grade level at first and third grade, you often don't catch up. And that means less likely to do as well in school, maybe less likely to go on in your schooling, and less adaptability in your career. And in addition, as I mentioned earlier, skills training is another vehicle that we think would allow people to get the skills training they need. We have a skill shortage in this country, and it's a real opportunity. So I would call those structural changes away from monetary policy. These are things that need to be done at the state level, the local level, but junior colleges, high schools, local businesses, and it needs to be done nationwide. And if we do those things, as well as a number of other actions, I'm hopeful that would make it more likely that blacks and Hispanics would participate more fully in the workforce.
Now, I appreciate that the Federal Reserve System is not just waking up to this issue. I remember seeing there was this calculation by the crew at the Boston Federal Reserve. It was back in 2015, a report called The Color of Wealth. Net worth of white households in Boston was something like $47,000. The net worth of black people on average in Boston, $8, not 80,000, but just $8. Yeah. I mean, the stakes here are as high as it gets.
They're very high. And we found, listen, a significant percentage of the U.S. population across the board does not have any savings. Or, as studies have shown, our $400 event would create a real issue in them being able to make ends meet. So this is a broad issue. And this goes away from just income inequality to wealth inequality in our country. And certainly we see that. A good start or good way to start is to make sure that underrepresented groups are fully participating in the workforce. But beyond that, we have a long way to go to address these kinds of issues.
Senator Sherrod Brown, the Democrat from Ohio, asked Mr. Powell when he was in front of the Senate this week about how the Federal Reserve policies might contribute to systemic racism. And he was suggesting maybe some ongoing regular assessments of that might be in order. What do you think? Like an ongoing data series about systemic racism that the Fed would monitor?
Well, since I've been involved with the Federal Reserve, and I joined 5 years ago, we look very closely in every one of our Federal Open Market Committee meetings as to measures of participation by various demographic groups, blacks, Hispanics, women. Also, we look at educational attainment. And I think it's critical that we continue to monitor those. We also do a lot of work locally at each of our reserve banks. We do a lot here at the Dallas Fed to try to understand what are the big issues that we're facing in trying to create a more inclusive economy. So I think to the extent that we can monitor various sources of data and try to get a better grip on what's going on, as well as what the drivers are of inequality, I think we'll do our jobs better. So I think it's something we take very seriously.
Now, what's your assessment of how we're doing now here in mid-June, looking at the economy in its current state? Are we doomed?
No, we're not doomed. We're in the middle of a severe contraction, though, in the second quarter. We knew that was going to happen because of the virus and the lockdowns. It's my own forecast that we'll contract in the second quarter of this year on an annualized basis, means multiply by four, about 35%. Some people think it'll be a little higher. That's the bad news. Having said that, we think the economy probably bottomed out toward the end of April or early May. We think we are now growing. The most recent jobs report reinforces that. The most recent retail sales number suggests that we're going to grow for the remainder of this year. And you're going to see positive job numbers in June, July, August. And we're going to climb out of this hole that we've dug in the second quarter. The issue will be how fast. And when we get to the end of the year, my own view is we'll probably still have an unemployment rate of 8% or greater. And we will have had a contraction for the full year probably as much as negative 4.5% to 5%. And I think a lot of how fast we grow from here is going to depend somewhat on monetary and fiscal policy, but I think it's going to depend very heavily on how widely people wear masks, how widely we're able to test, do contact tracing, and manage the healthcare protocols as we reopen. And so far, I think we're doing that unevenly. I think people are wearing, for example, masks unevenly. If we did that in a more disciplined way, I believe we would grow faster, we'd have a better GDP growth for the year, and we'd have a lower unemployment rate than we would otherwise. But I think the healthcare policies are at the forefront at this point.
Yeah, you mentioned monetary policy, which is your crew. You mentioned wearing masks properly. The governor of New York, I think, said it's a mask, not a chin strap. You know, wear them right. Hmm. But you left one out. What about fiscal policy? That's a fancy phrase for Congress spending. What is the role of Congress in getting us out of this hole?
So as I said, there's three parts of this. One is monetary, one's fiscal, and the third is the healthcare policies. There's still going to need to be additional fiscal policy. In particular, there'll have to be a decision made on continuing unemployment benefits. And I get that they'll need to be restructured in order to create more incentives for people to be in the workforce, but I think those continuing probably is one element of fiscal policy. The second issue that I see critically right now is the states and cities and municipalities in this country, they're able to borrow, but they because of what's happened this quarter, they didn't generate tax revenues, and that most of them have a fiscal hole that they're going to have to climb out of. Because most of them need to have a balanced budget, they will need to cut their staffs and do budget cuts in order to address that if they don't receive grants from the federal government. And I think as we're trying to grow jobs and climb out of this trough that we're in, I think to the extent that state and local governments don't have to do as significant a cutbacks, I think we'll grow faster. So those are two elements for fiscal policy that I'd mention.
Robert Kaplan is president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. Thank you so much for the time.
Good to talk to you, David.